Welcome to the Intersecting Us podcast, where math and life intersect.
In today's episode, Brian and Dave dive into the concept of belonging in numbers, discussing how mathematical exploration can foster a sense of community and connection.
You know, whether you're an extrovert or an introvert, I suppose there's times when you would like to spend some time by yourself, but each one of us always has that desire for belonging and being in community. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today in our podcast, because it is the chapter name, chapter 12 of Mathematics for Human Flourishing from Francis Hsu, called Community, which again has to do with collaboration and with belonging. So I'm going to bring Dave in here, and said you kind of maybe have a little anecdotal story to start us off with that happened to you fairly recently about community.
Yes. Hello, everybody. And one of the secrets for me is that right before we get on our podcast, I do a little workout. And for me, the workout's kind of nice because it gets rid of a little of that edge that you have, you know, that nervousness before we get on this big stage of our podcast. We're on a big stage, aren't we, Brian?
Oh, yeah, it's all relative, I guess. But yeah, we'll go with big.
This very humble stage that we are on, but still, it doesn't mean that there's not a little nervousness there. So anyway, I've got this workout and I enjoy it because it's part of a community. And there's nothing like working out when you're with others. It makes it go a lot easier. But we just had some new people that joined. You know, we're in January and that's when new people join. And I was talking with one gal, and I found out that she lives right by where my son lives. And we were actually talking last week, and this was when I first met her. And I found out that then her kids go to the same school as my son's kids. So I thought, well, hey, my son goes to this workout class. He's not there. Next time we're all together, we'll all meet. And that happened today. So I was introducing this gal to my son, Caleb, and we were talking about the school and her kids and everything. And then my son, Caleb, had mentioned his wife was teaching there. And she said, oh, you know, my gosh, that I know her. My kids talk about her all the time. You know, they just love her as a teacher. She's a substitute and they're going to be so sad she's gone. And so, you know, it was so neat to have that community where, like, all, you know, there was just this connection. And then I was thinking, oh, there's this other guy that's working out and he's the football coach over at this school. I wonder if they know each other. So I brought them together. Oh yeah, he had one of their kids in his football team and she has triplets and, the three of them are going to be on his team next year. And he had heard about them because they're triplets and how big they were. And he's an offensive line coach and he was getting all excited and you could see the mom just beaming with pride. And so, you know, it was just fun because, you know, here's this person who's just joining this workout class, probably feeling a little bit alone. And now all of a sudden she, you know, knows these people who know her kids. And it was like instant connection to a community. And for me personally, that's what I get excited about is when these so-called circumstances of community just pop up and we just find out really kind of how small this world really is.
Yeah. And I think the small world came to me really pointedly in this chapter. I had read it already. And then as we were kind of getting ready for the podcast this morning, I kind of looked it over and there's a couple, he always starts with a couple quotes. And there was one quote, which was, I thought was really good. I'll just read it because, you know, it says, what is belonging? The extent to which an individual feels accepted, valued, and legitimate within the community. And I thought, oh, that's, you know, and this comes from a, you know, math person. And I'm like, I read the name. I'm like, well, that name seems familiar. And it's Diana Hansberger. And I thought, I went to college with a Diana Hansberger. And there's probably not that many of them around. And I, sure enough, this is Simpson College, 1982 to 1986. She was one of the four math majors along with me. And so I'll have to look her up again, but here she is. You know, you talk about small world, you know, it just brought back a lot of memories. We did, I don't know, she was always fun to, you know, to work together with it because we're talking about, you know, collaboration and in Sue's book here, he's talking about, you know, trying to work together and how you might not be the brightest and the smartest, but yet if you're working together on a certain problem or that you might give something the other person didn't think of. And so the different perspectives, but I remember it was differential equations. Deanna was bright, very bright. has been teaching at Carleton College now, apparently for a long time. But it was just one of those things, you know, no matter how bright you are, sometimes things just don't, the change doesn't always fall in the meter. And Diffie Q is a little different, you know. And so I remember I was having no trouble with it, but what way I usually went at things is just, yeah, how do you do it? I'll figure it out, you know. She was more step back and look, what am I doing? What am I doing this for? What am I going to use this for? You know, and even for her, because she's been a teacher now for years, it was probably like, how am I going to teach this? I just wanted to get an A, you know? And so my method, she just kind of, I said, well, just do it this way. Maybe the change will find. And it did. That's what happened. We worked together. And she's like, well, I was having trouble figuring out why you do that next step. I said, you always do it this way. If it's like this, you always do it this way. If it's like this. And she got it. But then, right before one of the exams, she was kind of like, oh, now I get it. Now she got the big picture. So I helped her. And I won't bore you with the abstract algebra one, but I had the same kind of problem with abstract algebra. I was having trouble figuring it out, but she showed me the big picture of it was groups of things and looking a little bit different. And then she helped me. So that's how ironic. We're talking about community. And here is a quote from a fellow mathematician that we each helped each other in community at Simpson College some 30 some years ago. That's ironic. But like you said, your story, it's like the small world, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that is, and I know you and I both have a passion for community, and that's kind of like why we put together Intersecting Us. It's not intersecting me. It's intersecting.
There you go.
Yeah. It's intersecting us because we really do value community. And so one of the things that some of you probably know is that we're involved with Coaching Actuaries. And Coaching Actuaries is an online actuarial exam prep company. And the reason why we started it was that it was an opportunity to help people pass exams in a community. Up until that time, the exam prep providers were really one-person shops. There would be one person who write a manual, and then you buy that person's manual. And we just came along at the right place at the right time when the web was becoming more and more of an online opportunity for learning. And we were able to leverage that technology. But the idea that we had from the beginning was we wanted to be a team-based approach to passing the exams. And so I'm, you know, one member of the team, but I've hired several other actuaries who work together, and we kind of have a very team approach to how we provide actuarial content. And it's not just the actuaries. We use platform people to create the technology, and we have support people to be able to answer questions, and we have design and creative people to make everything look good. And so our company is in such of a contrast to where our competition was at, because we chose a very community-based, kind of like a full-service opportunity for people to pass exams. And it seems like, you know, the customers have really appreciated that and realized that, okay, sometimes more a community is a better way to get through the exams.
Well, and it is, and it's ironic as you were talking, and we could maybe talk about this a little bit. I didn't think about that till now, but one of the things in the chapter that kind of came to mind as you were relating that story about coaching actuaries and giving some background about it was that he talked about Francis Hsu in this book about the desire of community in mathematics must develop the virtue of hospitality. You know, and as you were saying that, it's like I know in coaching actuaries you had some folks, I guess more from the Far East than the Middle East, but both. And then you talked about India, and then I've known some people from the Middle East, and I know I have some ignorance obviously about those cultures, but I do know that hospitality is a big deal. Right. You know, that you treat respect of culture and person and the values are there. So, but that's kind of the background of the way, you know, Coaching Actuaries is working and really Intersecting Us. I mean, our whole idea is if we can do some of the same that he's talking about, where you value people, excellence in teaching, excellence in mentoring. I know you've done some mentoring and still do. I do some too. It's really trying to value the person and letting them see, hey, you belong. You belong to something. But right. I do think other cultures probably do a little bit better, or not probably, definitely do a better job than the American culture with hospitality. I don't, you know, that, and I know you've got, I don't know what the ratio is, but you've got a lot of folks that probably their culture, that maybe that permeates the coaching actuaries culture, I guess is my point.
Right.
Give me a little while to get there, but.
Well, that's funny that you say that because I guess like you hadn't thought about the coaching actuaries thing. I hadn't thought about that cultural thing until you mentioned it, but literally right before we had this podcast, I had lunch and, after having my smoothie, there's these treats that were on the table, and the treats were made by one of our staff people who comes from Malaysia. And every year he makes these same treats to prepare for the Chinese New Year.
And, okay.
And so the Chinese New Year has become a pretty big deal at Coaching Actuaries because we have so many Asian people that celebrate that. And it's just wonderful to see how they do that as a culture. And we celebrate the New Year here too, but they take that to another level, how they celebrate the Chinese New Year. And they really know how to bring the food and the festivities and the family. And in Coaching Actuaries, we have been benefactors of that and have adopted it. And so, you know, us American people really enjoy it because we get another holiday. And it's different than the holidays we're used to. And that diversity is a blessing. And so those are the cultural things, those community things that I feel so blessed to be a part of. And there's so much part of my life that I tend to not even sometimes think of them, but, you know, realizing a lot of people don't have those blessings. And, you know, those things are worth pursuing and opening ourselves up to the diversity that's out there with other people.
Well, and I think that does go back to the original quote by Deanna, you know, about, you know, belonging has to do with being valued. Because we come, everybody comes from different, even if we grow up in the same town, you still have a little bit different, you know, values in your family and all that type of stuff. And being legitimate and being accepted, you know, and Sue hits that a lot in there. He talks about some collaboration efforts with different math things, but, you know, but really, he's always so good at talking about virtues, and I think I know you've got some examples here on collaborating and coming up with math. But you know, I like the way he put it, virtue of attention to people, which I thought was really well put. You know, short, succinct, and he gives a lot of good examples in this chapter about, you know, people coming and struggling, and the realize we've had this before with the struggle chapter, but struggling together is almost always better than trying to struggle by yourself. And so that valuing people and belonging is great when things are going good, and belonging is certainly great when things are going bad, whether it's having trouble doing a math problem or you have some sort of big catastrophe in your life or success, whether it's Chinese New Year or going to a funeral, you know, belonging makes a big difference. But I know you wanted to maybe talk a little bit about some of the work you've been doing with videos and how that community kind of permeated that process too.
Sure. The first of all, I'm part of a book club called Roots, and that was one of the things Sue mentioned in there is the value of book clubs. And so I had two thumbs up when I read that because I have a you know, just a thrill being part of Roots. We get together weekly and we go over math books, and it's really about the community because I have read a lot of the math books that we've gone through already. So it's not just about information, but it's about learning from other people's perspective, being able to be encouraged by other people and be of encouragement to other people. So that's all part of the reason why we gather at Roots. But one of the things that I tried to do, I got so excited about the first book we went through. It was on Journey Through Genius, and we talked about the proofs of the Pythagorean theorem, and you know, it just kind of like struck a chord for me. So I went off on a tangent and decided, well, I'm just going to explore this. And me being me, I decided, well, this looks like I could make a video out because I kind of like doing videos and it's just what I enjoy doing. And part of it is I just learned so much by doing this. So I thought, well, I'll do a couple of videos on it, and two videos turn into three turn into four. And last count, Brian, I'm up to 8 videos on this.
Wow. Because
it just doesn't stop. But I kind of thought about the video process that I'm doing. And as we review the book so far, and we're on chapter 12 out of 13, there is so much of the book that's in the videos that I'm doing that I thought, well, why don't I just kind of share a few of the highlights as to how this book has impacted me? Because, you know, I'm doing the videos just because it's what I enjoy doing. But then when I stop and pause and think about it, I realize so much of this book is talking about what I'm doing. And so maybe it will help to go through some of these just to give specific examples. And, you know, the first of all is it's the community thing. We, you know, we've been talking about this theorem, but not only have we talked about it, but one of the things that I got excited about was we're probably quite aware that, you know, the proof of the Pythagorean theorem goes back to Pythagoras, right?
Yes.
And then Euclid is the famous guy. So those are Greeks way back in historic time. But I'm not sure how many people know that there's been proofs over the years that have accumulated, and now there's literally hundreds of them. And that is pretty cool because that's a community picture that you have different people from different times in different cultures looking at the same problem and kind of making contributions to it, looking at things from different perspectives, but coming to the same conclusion. So I don't know, Brian, if that rings a bell with you, but I just think that that is cool. You know, I think we have the same thing with our faith journey in that, you know, we can read about things from the biblical times, and you're such a student of the history of the faith that, you know, you get excited when you read about Martin Luther and, you know, and so there's just this idea of community of the being belonging to that same thing. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, and I think when you talk about the community part, you know, there's the collaboration where you're actually right in the same room together and doing mm-hmm. things like some of the things Sue talked about with a couple of the examples. But there's also that you're looking for truth, you know, and so you're talking about the truth of the Pythagorean theorem, and, right. or you're looking at the truth of a, you know, a existential transcended being or, you know, whichever you're. But if the Pythagorean theorem is true, or if it's true that there's a creator that created everything that's transcendent that we can see, if you come at it from different directions, if the truth is there, you should see some patterns. And right. it should be proving that is what you're doing right. on the math side. You're proving it. And I think, you know, I suppose in some way you're having proofs of it, or at least arguments or cases that it's true. So, and that's what you see. Like you said, you can read a Martin Luther or an Augustine or a Aquinas or, you know, some of these other people throughout history. Or even Islam and Jewish, and they come and it looks like, hey, this looks very similar.
Right.
The conclusions are very similar. In math, it's not very similar. They're exactly the same.
It is right.
It's the same thing. If there's something true there, people from different walks of life at different time periods in history are going to discover the same thing. I guess that's the way it looked like to me.
Right.
And it's kind of like a historical community. They may never met each other. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a virtual. We're talking about, I mean, this is virtual before Zoom made it virtual.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
And I think it's so cool because when I, you know, most of you haven't heard Brian like talk about or reading like from the Gospel of John or something. But, you know, when Brian talks and reads from the Gospel of John and talks about it, I feel like for some reason, like I'm actually there. You know, I read about it and I kind of have to fumble through the words, but I can tell when Brian reads about it, he's actually picturing himself like in the story and like living and wondering like, okay, I wonder what happened here. What was this going on? And so it's like you feel like you're part of that community of people who were experiencing things firsthand. And I think that that's one of the great things about, I guess, exploring things that have a permanent level of truth. You know, we could talk about the weather, but really it doesn't matter what the weather is today when we get to tomorrow. That, you know, that topic is very temporal, but things of math and things of faith are topics that are of permanence, and the truths that are there tend to be things that don't change. And so we can go back in time and learn from these people because they're exploring the same questions we're exploring.
Yeah, and I think that's where math and life, you know, our math and philosophy, however you want to talk about it, that they intersect so well, you know, backdoor mm-hmm. intersecting us, because they're looking for that. We've talked about different constants and different theorems in math, and then different essential propositions in theology. They're foundational, you know, mm-hmm. You have to have this or everything else kind of falls apart. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what math does well, but so does philosophy. You've got, you know, these types of things that you're trying to find the truth of. And mm-hmm. when you find the truth, there is that aha moment, but it's really cool when you meet somebody else that's found the truth from a different direction.
Right.
You know, and I think that's kind of what you're experiencing with the Pythagorean theorem is that.
Yeah. And so there's a cool story about this. So now in the context of going back to the times of Euclid and Pythagoras and the Greeks, and you think about, you know, how they discovered geometry and how we have been leaning on that over the years. And really, the Pythagorean theorem has been something that the best minds and even the average minds have been looking at over the years. And so it's one area of math that has received a tremendous amount of attention. And that's why there's hundreds of proofs. And so by the time we get to 1938, now 1938 seems like almost kind of like a history to us, but relative to the times of the Greeks, and you think about all the mathematicians that traveled from Euclid to Archimedes to Newton to Leibniz to Fermat to Euler to Gauss to, you know, they're huge lists, and these are just the famous ones. There's a cloud of witnesses there. I mean, a Hall of Fame group of people that have looked at this. And so you would have thought that pretty much anything about the Pythagorean theorem that we need to know has already been discovered, because what else could you, I mean, it's just a triangle, right? And so how much mystery can there be? And yet 1938, this gal, her name is Anne Condit, discovered a brand new proof of the Pythagorean theorem. And not only was it a new proof, it was historic in that all of her logic came from a point that was different than anyone else's point. And her point happened to be on the midpoint of the hypotenuse. But the main point is that she had a different point of view, a different approach than everyone else. And so Euclid had an approach, and other people came up with other proofs like that, but they kind of followed similar paths as Euclid in the beginning, whereas Anne's was a totally different path as she went on from the first step. And so that, you know, made news. Is like, wow, not only is this a new theorem, but it's totally new, like out of the blue. Why, you know, how could someone have thought of this before? And it took us so long to figure this out. And then to me, the really cool thing was when Anne discovered this, she was 16 years old.
No, yeah, I remember reading that. That's amazing.
And so imagine being a 16-year-old discovering something missed by Euclid and Archimedes. Now, maybe someone discovered it and we just never recorded it. But for the sake of argument, let's just say nobody else had discovered it, because essentially nobody else had. And then this 16-year-old out of the blue comes in and finds something new. And so talk about a community where we've got an opportunity to do math, is that there is space for everyone to look at things differently and contribute something new to the story of math. And it's not likely that any of us will maybe do something like Anne did, but every time we try to solve a problem, we may be approaching it slightly different than someone else does. And, you know, that's just a cool opportunity that we have in doing math.
Well, I know Sue uses the analogy of crossing a river in the book about, you know, some people, and it would kind of go back to my little story of like differential equations in college with Deanna. The idea of, you know, I would be the one that would look for each next stone, you know, and just, okay, I got to that stone. Now I look for the next stone, you know, or somebody else may look back and kind of see a big picture and try to say, well, is there a path there that we can use? And you're all going to probably, hopefully, if you don't fall in, you'll probably get to the other side, but there's different ways of doing it. But I think he said it in this book, or maybe I just read it somewhere else, but the idea, and it's not, you know, innovative, but the idea of that when you do find a new way, or so you're standing on the shoulders of giants from the past, you know, and I think that's always always interesting, because in philosophy, or even theology, you look at, there are what things are not something that are physical that we can touch. You know, there's abstract objects, mm-hmm. which are triangles and numbers and all that kind of stuff. And then there's maybe a creator that could be an mm-hmm. object to do this. But yet it's interesting because both of those things, people are still discovering ways to prove it or mm-hmm. make a case for it, those things. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's back to it, when you do that, A, in community, it's more, it gives you probably a little bit more joy because mm-hmm. it's not by yourself. And B, it's the idea that you're relating to something that's bigger than yourself, and that has mm-hmm. some joy too. So it's a combination, and that's why we just keep seeing that through this book, but just through our own endeavors with Intersecting Us, how much life and math intersect and helping one understand the other. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, right. really, this, you know, when you're looking at the struggle together, that's probably more something life we think about. But yet when you get over to math, you know, mm-hmm. there's struggles there too. And the life struggles can kind of cross over into the math. And you just kind of, you've illustrated some of those. And I don't know what was the, I can't remember the girl's name, the 16-year-old. I don't know if she'd call it a struggle, but I think she would probably say, hey, I would have never been able to come up with this if I hadn't read about other stuff in the past, mm-hmm. you know, all the way back to the Greeks, as you said. Yeah.
Right. So speaking of struggle, I went through a short list of things that happened while I was putting these videos together that pertain to the book. And struggle was one of the first ones I came to because I really have struggled. And I think that it's, I'm trying to make this clear, but when I started the videos, I really had no agenda. It's not like I had an aha moment I wanted to share in advance. I really didn't. I just knew that, okay, this proof was really cool by Euclid. And then I stumbled into this proof by Anne. And I thought, well, let's just kind of work that proof out in a video. And I thought that would be kind of fun. But I struggled understanding her proof. And then I found a third proof and struggled with that. But then the real struggle came when I stepped back and said, okay, I've done all three of these proofs. What are some things I notice about them? And I explored. And so exploration is, another virtue that's talked about. So I explored how these proofs were connected. And it was kind of fun to do that because now I'd kind of like already proven the theorems. And so the work was done. And now I could just kind of sit back and enjoy the proofs and try to figure out how they are connected. I was not expecting to find anything, but as I was programming it, I started realizing, oh, this part connects to that part and this part connects to this part. And so I started thinking about it. It's almost like this was water and ice and steam. These three proofs looked very different on the outside, but as I struggled to dig deeper inside of the essence of the proofs, you uncover that, okay, there's H2O that is in common with all three. And so that was, like an aha moment when you get to that point that you see, well, these things really are related, even though it appears that they're going down very different paths. And of course, they are related because they're talking about the same triangle, but the approaches are so different. It doesn't seem like there's common ground between the three of them.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that who would have thought, obviously somebody gave this young lady back in the 30s some confidence to do that, because I think when he talked about community here, as we kind of sum up here at the end, he talked about once, and I remember having this happen at an actuarial conference where I was trying to follow it. I was just like, I don't know what the guy's talking about. I'm like, I bet everybody else in here knows. Uh-huh. And he talked about that, being the Francis did in his book about, more than likely there's a lot of other people that don't know either. And I think his whole idea was the virtue of being vulnerable, allowing other people to ask questions, kind of the old Socratic method. Socrates even said, things like, the fact when you realize what you don't know, that's part of wisdom, mm-hmm. and giving some people some slack. And so mm-hmm. that's part of belonging too. You know, there's a difference between belittling somebody and teasing somebody, right? You know, you belittle somebody when you attack their character and their ability. You tease them when you say, oh yeah, that was kind of silly. You know, I could have done the same thing, you know, but that mm-hmm. that's kind of the way things can go with that. But I do think there's some, comfort level that people have to be able to be innovative to do this. And if you're comfortable in a community, you could do so much more. And I remember in one of his stories in there, he talked about they were having trouble with a problem in a math class at the graduate level. And they all got together and just started playing with it. And all the anxiety went away and they got figured out in 45 minutes. You know, it's mm-hmm. just like, you know, because they were having some fun with it and they were, mm-hmm. they all belonged. And they said, yeah, mm-hmm. we said stupid things. We said smart things, but we figured it out because mm-hmm. we all were vulnerable and we valued each other's input. No matter, mm-hmm. we didn't ask what your grade point was. We just tried to figure it out. Yeah. So that I thought mm-hmm. that was good the way he did that. And again, he always does that so well, permeating. This is, you know, it's about math, obviously, but it's really about life. You know, he's really trying to get us to realize that there's virtues that have to do with people. And obviously you can't have community without people. So I thought he did a really good job with that.
Yeah. And he doesn't explicitly say anything, but the message is clearly there when he's talking with his friend, Christopher, who is in prison. And you think about Christopher, he obviously is in prison. And so he has a lot of limits on where he can go and things like that. But the beauty of math is that it is open for everybody to pursue. And so Christopher, who is in prison, has the opportunity to study math. It's not bound by culture. It's not bound by language. It's not bound by time.
It's not even bound by bars, you know, I mean, literally.
Oh, yeah. The bars of prison. You know, right. And so, you know, that there's no reason that keeps that community from happening. And it's really endearing to see Christopher and Francis exchange letters and thoughts. And, you know, that's a community of two people, and two people makes up a community. So it doesn't have to be big, but it's neat to see the diversity at play and the joy that they gain from each other. The respect that they have, and really they're illustrating flourishing in math, which is, you know, what we're all trying to accomplish.
Yeah. And I think that's good kind of to end with there's a quote. It's the very last couple lines that Chris writes in this chapter, because he's seeing, and I think next chapter and next podcast, we'll talk about a little bit more, but he's obviously quite, Chris is quite taken aback and happy that Francis is doing this for him. But I think we'll end with this. Chris writes this in his letter to Francis. And this is something I think Sue's trying to challenge us to make this different, because this is what Chris is seeing in his environment. But he's seeing Francis come in and completely shed light on that, you know, and mm-hmm. try to change it. And so Chris says, in my opinion, this is a radical oversimplification of what I'm trying to say. People don't care enough about other people right now and haven't for a while. From my personal experience, this is the things I see in the world. But Chris sees Francis is different, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what we're trying to do at Intersecting. That's what we're trying to do with this book. It's like people want to belong. Yeah, maybe be vulnerable and find a way to help them belong, whether it's in math or in mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. We challenge you for that on this podcast. We don't do that much, but we'll do that today. Challenge you to maybe find somebody to help belong that might need it.
This has been the Intersecting Us podcast. To further engage with Intersecting Us, go to intersectingus.com.